Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got NWT Pro Dusty Menke back on the show right after the first stop here in the 2025 season down on Lake Sharp in South Dakota. And we're also just going to get some really good general fishing information from him. So we kind of have a couple different deep dives here. A lot of fun, as always, having Dusty on the show. So let's get to it here. NWT Pro Dusty Menke from Walker, Minnesota. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Of course, we're going to get to the NWT tournament, but even before that, man, you've been doing a little bit of fishing?
Yeah. No, all of a sudden, spring showed up here. You know, I'm in northern Minnesota, Walker, Minnesota. Most of our lakes now are clear of ice, but we always look forward to starting the year on the Rainy River. But this year, you know, with the thick ice and the kind of the later spring, we didn't really know if we'd have a chance to get up there. But luckily, for the last week of the season, it only goes till about April 15th. So a week prior to that, it opened up enough. And I think we kind of caught the tail end of it. But we still caught some fish and had a good time. I got to go there, I think, around the 12th and 13th or whatever weekend that was, right before the season closed on the Rainy. And, you know, it was one of those things. We should have been there about 3 or 4 days prior. I had some friends up there just sending pictures, but I just couldn't make it right then and there. But when we did get up there, I got to go with a few buddies, you know, my friends Toby and Zach, and we had a lot of fun. Stayed at Sportsman's Lodge there. My buddy Jeff Anderson runs a bunch of those resorts up there, so we got to stay there in one of the big villas. It was pretty nice. And highlight of that trip is I got to watch my buddy Toby catch a 12-pound, 10-ounce, 32-inch walleye, and that was just awesome. He blew the weekend away. We have these little events that we look forward to in the spring, and that one we call the Derb, and it's a traveling trophy that Toby made. And last year, we went to Red Wing. So it kind of travels to wherever we want to go. And this year it was Rainy River, and Toby just blew us away with that big walleye. It was pretty cool.
You look at the spring, like especially the river opportunities, like the Great Lakes always get headlines, you know, the tributaries over there.
Yeah.
As good as the Rainy's been fishing since forever, and then, you know, you kind of throw in like the Missouri River system we've got out here, and it's like the opportunities are just unbelievable this day and age.
Oh, yeah. Yep, the spring is when you see some of the biggest fish, you know, and then recently in the fall, you know, Oahe's kind of been highlighted,
Yeah.
stuff like that. So the thing with social media now is it's pretty instant. You know, before it was like, oh, read something in the outdoor news, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's
like months after the
pretty quick.
fact, you know.
Yeah. Now it's like one, people are like, oh, here's what the launch looks like up here in the rainy. It's like an hour by hour. You know, it's pretty cool.
You know, I want to talk plenty about down on Sharp there, the NWT that you just fished, but you were down on the Missouri River system, just sort of flexing for your sponsors down at the Shields University. I want to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's correct. The Shields University is held every spring out of Chamberlain. And this year I got invited down to go down and give some speed trainings and get the employees up to date. We mostly highlighted Northland Tackle, some of our other GSM brands. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I got to do that with Jason Mitchell. And then, you know, we fish a little fun tournament event with the guys down there. And that bite in Chamberlain in town there was pretty tough. And unfortunately, the day of the tournament, we were faced with like some 25-mile-an-hour north winds. And it's like a 3-hour event. So I just kind of stayed around in town and scrounged a few walleye bites. But nonetheless, it was a lot of fun. And just seeing the enthusiasm of the employees. And you know, talking new tackle and tactics, it got the juices flowing, and actually, you know, it got me on the Missouri system there, which, you know, all of it fishes pretty similar, so it was just good to make sure the boat was running good, and yeah, because that's the first time I had it out, so.
You know, one thing that I've been asking the guys, tournament guys that I've had on the podcast this spring, the off season, or just like that first tournament prep. I'm curious about that for you. You know, you talk about having a little bit of a spring tradition where you hit the rainy, or you know, you kind of get together with the buddies and stuff like that. From like a serious standpoint, like where do you feel like the practice reps, I guess is the way I put it. When do you feel like the reps or the mental reps or the physical reps like really start happening where you're trying to get in tournament shape for that first one?
Yeah, that's a great question. So to kind of like go back, you know, when the year ends, you know, there's just some time there around Christmas. You don't really think too much of it. For me, I like to start it around that time, actually, in like November and December, this way, a different way, but it's like I like to look forward to ice fishing, and it's for me, it's like conquering the day, right? So up here, you know, like we talked about the rainy, that's, you know, it's like every year I look forward to the rainy that time of year. Well, early ice is Red Lake up here, and I think I made probably 5 or 6 trips, and I just like conquering the day. So my first trip up there was with a good buddy, Mark Bogonic, and we caught the walleyes, and to me, that's, you know, like I won the day that day, you know, like we kept 6 or 8 walleyes, perfect eaters, and we got on them, you know. So I think as a tournament angler, just, you know, even fast forward now to last week to NWT Lake Sharp, my pre-fish, I just focus on having fun and conquering the day. Every day I want to limit, I want to learn something. Even the days that I did bad pre-fish, I don't want to beat up too bad on myself. You know, I had a good streak going for 4 or 5 days of pre-fish where I was weighing, you know, 8 to 10, 11 pounds a day, you know. So for me, it starts early ice, conquering the day. Even I've been told in the past, you know, like the girlfriend says, when are you going to shut it down? You know, and it's like, it's hard to, you know, like I want to, that's, I think it's part of like, you know, mental health too. Like, I don't want to sit inside. I want to go outside and ice fish. I want to, you know, it's not tournament ice fishing. It's just conquering the day, I think, is what it comes to for me. So one of my last ice trips, a buddy and I remember because we were watching the Bassmaster Classic. I said, I want to go up and catch those big Red Lake crappies. And we knew it wouldn't be an easy task. But we knew we could figure it out with the information we had. And It literally took us all day, and we watched a lot of the Bassmaster Classic inside my side-by-side because it was not very warm out either. I kind of was like telling him, I'm like, man, we should have maybe just stayed home and watched the Classic. And because the local guy here from Grand Rapids ended up winning Easton Fothergill. So it was pretty special for us Northern Minnesota guys to get to watch that and kind of know him because he fishes in some of the local walleye tournaments up here. So that was really cool. But it took us mostly all day and our batteries were just about dead. And we had a local buddy who guides up there that they gave us a few pointers right there, and we got on. We only caught about 10 or 12, but we looked at each other and we're like, man, we got them. We got some pictures. We didn't keep any, but we went up here and we got her done. And I thought that was pretty cool. So that's kind of how I like to prepare for fishing, is just by ice fishing or just, you know, making a goal or an adventure like that, you know, just going to the Rainy River in the spring. And I think that to me is just time on the water, you know, that Rainy River and getting to go down early to the Shields U and just talking to people. And some of the employees were fishing at night and early in the morning, and they were watching the walleye spawn on the rocks. And like, you don't get that kind of information unless you're there and on the water and talking to people, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what's pretty cool. I do like to watch a lot of videos. I have a pretty good selection of old DVDs, and yes, I still have a DVD player.
Nice.
But I watched, I have FLW, there was an event on Lake Sharp. I went back and watched that. I take pictures, I take notes. John and Dewey make fun of me. I have old paper maps I bring with, you know, like I start looking at Google Earth. I just like to get the juices flowing. And then a big thing too is preparation. Like the more prepared I can be with my gear organized, you know, the less I have to do when I'm down there. So I found like this year, my preparation at night was very minimal. I was pretty prepared because sometimes you can be out in your boat rigging and pretty soon you look at the watch and it's 9, 10 o'clock. And realistically at that time you should have ate by now and you should be sleeping. So that's all things I've learned on getting older and getting more prepared and organized and doing little things like that.
Mental reps. I love that. When does the strategy sessions start happening? Somewhere along the line, you know, whether it's during pre-fish or whatever, like at what point in time does like the real strategizing actually happen?
Yeah, I think, you know, like John and Dewey and I and you know, like your local friends that live out there and in Pier, and you know, Lake Sharp is not fished as much as say, you know, like Chamberlain, or definitely not as much as Lake Oahe, but still those guys get out there in the spring and spend a lot of time. So it's just, you know, we just start getting the juices flowing, talking, looking at past tournament results, weights, you know, kind of getting a feel for like, you know, almost mathematical, like percentages or what you're going to need, or, and it gets flowing. And then Dewey lives right there, so he got a lot of time on the water, but he decided, you know, this year didn't want to necessarily call us every day and flood us with this information. We don't want to go there with like a preconceived notion of,
yeah,
or, you know, he wanted us to get there and, you know, kind of bring our knowledge, us growing up in Minnesota, more Mississippi River.
Oh, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. So that, you know, it actually reminded me how it's set up kind of like pool four in the Mississippi, where it gets to like a head of a lake where there's some backwaters and back lakes, like Goose Lake is like, you know, the lake behind Farm Island, and this Whipple Lake where there's really not much current going on, but it's the warmest water, you know. So, but the one thing that was different, obviously, was how clear and cold the water was when we got there, and you know how spooky the fish could be. So things were definitely different, obviously, than a Mississippi. It's that cold, clear water, and they're just different fish. But you know, you want to win the tournament pitching, right? Everybody's favorite thing to do is pitch jigs or plastics. But I immediately just started trolling, just kind of knowing that that John and Dewey have kind of went all in on the forward facing. They
sure.
don't even have kicker. They don't even have kickers on their boat this year, you know. So, and I just kind of knew, like, clear water, warm water, shallow water. Like, so I just started trolling pretty shallow, and I was having some really good success. But like 2 days before the tournament, that bite just went away on me, you know. So. Yeah, but yeah, no, I think honestly too, like the strategizing never ends either. Like, I honestly think we strategized more after the tournament on this one. Not that we necessarily did bad. It was more of like, what, why did we miss this? Or next time we have to do this, you know?
Sure.
So it's not so much too like just getting all fired up. We all did our homework beforehand and then strategized as we got down there. But it was also afterward, you know, what we shouldn't have been afraid to make a run south. We probably should have pre-fished more. We should have did this and that, you know. So I think, you know, you can never stop learning, whether it's before or after.
I still think that is like a really interesting or sort of a fun thing to hear. You know, you got a local on your team. I mean, Dewey. I mean, the guy is only a few years away from, you know, being voted mayor of Pier. I mean, he's just like the, you know, the prince, the prince of Pier.
Yes.
No, I'm joking. But yeah, like, you know, you got pretty savvy for you guys as a team to realize like, no, let's just treat this way more objectively. And Dewey's sitting there thinking, no, I am going to get those extra days on the water. But I need you guys as my teammates. I need you guys to come hit this with your fresh eyes, just like if you were going to Erie or just like if you were going to the Illinois River, you know, somewhere that's nobody's home body of water, right?
Yeah.
I think that is super interesting to hear. And yeah. I like that a lot. I'm sure you guys had fantastic conversations as a result of that. But I'm curious about, you know, kind of, you know, describing the pre-fish a little bit, because you guys had some weather come and go, you know, and you know, you're at a really like a crucial time of the year for at least this year specifically. It's like you guys ended up pre-fishing and then on the tournament, it seemed like, you know, all the posts and all the information was that there was a lot of spawning fish and, you know, it's a system that runs north and south in a place in the Midwest where, you know, at this time of year where you had like major water temperature differences, you know, down south versus up north. And like, yeah, I can only imagine a ton of decisions to be made. And then again, on top of it, you know, it's South Dakota. So it's like a slot tournament, and that in itself sort of creates decisions to be made in terms of like where you're finding fish and like, you got to keep unders. Can I catch overs? Like, I'm sort of curious how, you know, you would like describing or just sort of looking back and sort of the notable sort of stories from your pre-fish and sort of how some of that strategy was maybe coming together or just some of the decisions that you were faced with.
Yeah. So, you know, as pre-fish started, we just kind of spread out and John kind of focused on the south and I kind of focused on doing some weird stuff like trolling and
why does that have to be called weird now? It's like what used to be what everybody did on the Missouri River.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
love it.
So yeah, we just kind of spread out and just, you know, like it was really cool staying at Dewey's house and it was awesome. Yeah. But it seemed like we didn't really we got to park, you know, boats in his garage and it was super awesome, you know, but it seemed like there wasn't a lot of time or strategy talk, you know, for being kind of at home, if that makes sense. So we kind of looked back at that too and kind of mentioned that, you know, for going forward but basically, you know, like it never stops on the strategy and looking back, you know, we wish we would have spent more time, you know, looking down south. But we had some good pre-fish, like I told you. I had some good days. And you start factoring in a 50, 60-mile run, you know, there goes 3-4 hours of your day of just running. So, and it seemed like we found, you know, when you're by town with the cold water coming out of Oahe, that that you could catch pre-spawners, and like a 16 incher weigh close to 2 pounds because it was so fat. So we knew that down south you could get the numbers and you could maybe get it done fast, but there was no like pre-spawn like that, right? But at the end of the day, you know, some guys kind of moved up the leaderboard with more of a consistent average making the run from the south. But at the same time, you know, the guy who won the tournament was right next to me doing the same thing I was, and I missed a couple bites on day one, and you never know, that could have been the difference. So looking back, I'm not too disappointed in my decisions, but I think we had a fairly good pre-fish. Just looking back, I think the only thing we take back is maybe not looking down south a little more, a little harder. But we were also looking at the weather, you know, like the wind on day one did not make for a pleasant ride for those guys going down there. One thing I got scared in pre-fish too is how many deadheads and sandbars. The water was fluctuating big time. Like one day it was like, man, I didn't see that sandbar yesterday. I shined up my skag and prop 2 or 3 different times, just not knowing, you know, how it was. But the scariest thing I think going back to was seeing like the deadheads in that system and the size of the logs, just treacherous.
Did anybody have any trouble with that? I didn't hear any of those stories.
You know, I didn't hear, I know one pro from Canada told me him and his co-angler had to get their boxers.
Oh, to get off a sandbar or something?
Yeah. In town, which is...
No.
Yeah, I was taking my head away from the wheel and kind of look, you know, I am kind of that way. Like, they kind of call me squirrel. Or if there's like a shiny object, I'm kind of focused on that. Yeah. So I was distracted, and luckily I was just idling, and pretty soon my boat just plopped up on that same sandbar that guy was on. But you just don't think that things can get that shallow, and like being from Minnesota, stuff's pretty well marked, you know? There's no buoys out there saying like, sandbar, don't come here, you know? Like, it's just kind of known that you don't go out over that spot, you know? So to that guy's defense, like, he ran across it the one day, but you look on shore and the water went down on the rocks 2 feet, you know? So it was just kind of knowing those little things, and then the gamble of running through all those stumps and logs to make a 50-60 mile run. Just put it this way, it was easy to talk yourself out of it, but then at the end of the day when the tournament's over, it's like, man, you know, we're not afraid to make a run, you know.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description to this podcast. Like, it seemed like on this tournament, you had to kind of pick one or the other. Were you going to fish for the potential of pre-spawners, and that was going to eliminate the long run? You could fish for a longer time and be closer to town. Or you make the long run. Just hearing the stories and listening to the interviews, it doesn't sound like there was a ton of middle ground.
In
that conversation. And so, you know, like envisioning all that, looking back and the conversations you had with John and Dewey, you know, strategizing and whatnot, did any of you guys really feel like you were sniffing on like the winning strategy?
At times it felt like we were, but then that water level would drop or something would change, or, you know, the spawn was going on, the water's cold, and or Dewey's like, go back and try that. I'm like, they're gone, you know? So it was like, it was a true roller coaster this time where, you know, one day Dewey's feeling real good. And, you know, John was pretty calm and cool the whole time, it seemed. I was feeling very confident. And yeah, we definitely feed off of each other's confidence for sure. And one thing I've learned over the years too, is that, you know, just flip the switch and have that tournament come here to Leech Lake. Like, you know, like you got that local confidence, where, oh, the wind's blowing here, I'm going to go try there. You know, I might not have pre-fished there, you know.
Right.
Dewey kind of has that knowledge down there that we didn't have. And, yeah, but confidence is a big deal. One thing I've learned over the years is I've got to just focus on myself sometimes and don't put too much confidence in others, because you're going to – you know, a lot of times it's happened to me where I didn't pre-fish a spot, or like last year in the championship, I'm like, I'm going to go up where these guys are getting them, but I never really got to catch them there in practice. So trying to keep it a secret, you know?
Sure.
And it just flopped on me. And I'm like, man, I for surely could have got this much weight going down south to my spots, you know? And that's one thing I think I've learned, is that I just got to sometimes go with what I got to do. Yeah, Dewey and John can give me as many spots as they want, but if I didn't go there and catch them there, like, you got to do what you're confident in. And like, I was confident in getting a few key fish a day trolling. And I learned in practice that I didn't like trolling lead core, because there was so much gunk in the system. Like, even pitching jigs, like, there's this green moss you could not keep off your stuff. Yeah, so I fired my lead core, even though I think it was some guys kind of go-to in the tournament. I just did not like the baits are just getting slimed up, you know. So, yeah, just learning little things like that in practice. And then, like I said, the biggest thing I learned over the years is that I've got to kind of just do what I do and figure out what I figure out and kind of go with that.
Yeah, you know, this would be true if I'm just gathering information from my buddies for an everyday, you know, fishing trip. It's like, you don't always need to, it's not always about sharing spots, but just, you know, information about like, what kind of water temperatures are you seeing? What kind of water clarity are you seeing? I imagine that your guys' conversations are on such a high level of that it's old hat at this point. But that stuff is like, oh man, I would just pay to be, you know, a fly on the wall, just listening to you guys, you know, just chop up, you know, that type of stuff, you know, like, you know, as far as, you know, the type of pattern specific stuff that you can just sort of apply to your spots.
Yeah.
I did notice that, you know, looking at the top 20 in this tournament, you know, it wasn't exactly litter. There was a lot of, you know, away teams. There was a lot of Minnesotans, you know, hammering on it. And then like Bobby Crow, you know, he's a Columbia River guy, right? He's like, I mean, Bobby's been around forever, but, and he's fished that system, right? But it's like, you know, I think that that's kind of interesting. Was there anything to that, you think, like in hindsight, you know, that you feel like in a place like Sharp, that sort of made it, you know, to where, you know, these out of town guys were able to kind of objectively put together a plan and cash a lot of these, you know, top 10, top 15, top 20 checks.
Like Bobby Crow, like that guy has been around. He's fishing the PWT back. You know,
he's in some of those old DVDs that you got.
Yeah, yeah. So he's no slouch. And I want to say where he's at fishing, you know, the popular river out there in Washington.
Yeah, Columbia.
Like to go there someday, but I'd want to say that type of fishing, you know, fish is similar, and he always likes to come and fish those Missouri, you know, Dakota tournaments. You know, he's always a guy you kind of like, oh, you know, he's got a chance. But then coming to town, Dewey's got a pretty good connection in town there, and his tournament partner, Tyson Keller, it's like, oh, or his neighbor, you know, and good buddy Chris Hines, like those guys are all lethal. And, you know, they weren't really, you know, weren't teaming up with us as much as we wanted to. You know, it's like a lot of stuff going on in the room there. Looking back, it would have been maybe kind of fun to do, but I think it would also been kind of stepping on each other's feet. And those guys ended up doing good. But my buddies that you're kind of talking about from Minnesota, they got a really good team, and over the years they've dominated up here in Minnesota on the AIM Tour. And it's Nate Leninger took second, third Randy Topper, fifth Joe Brickell, and then the rest of their team, you know, Chuck Hassey landed in the money, and Tyler Wolden and Dylan Mackey, just good friends of mine. And you know, to be honest, when I heard they were coming out there, I was like, ah, oh, dang it.
Well, yeah.
They're good fishermen, man. Anywhere they go, they're going to be good. And they did something that any good team should have, and they're really good with their forward-facing sonar. And they spent a little time in the river. And anybody who knows in a river, that thing's basically useless. You know, it's the fish are tight to the bottom. Once you get a cast at them, it's rare your jig lands perfect enough to get in their face, you know.
Yep.
You're better off blind casting. So knowing their strengths, they put the time in towards the salts and trusted their electronics. And, you know, just knowing that's what they kind of had a pre-plan before they got there. And I think that's why they did so well, you know. So that's pretty cool of them. And then, you know, you've seen a mixture of some local sticks in the top and – and you know, like Courts did good, and
Tom Wynn, you know, he's always a lethal.
Yeah, Tom, man, that guy just amazes me. He jumped back on day two. They caught like a 5-pounder. That's just how this tournament was. Like on day two, with an hour to go, I threw back a definite upgrade, knowing that I had an hour, and that 1 ounce sort of got me one or two spots higher. But looking back, like I'm not going to just throw in a box for an ounce, you know.
How many fish could you guys bring in?
You could keep 8 fish.
8, okay.
And 2 over 20 inches. But all week of practice, I don't even know if I caught a fish over 20 inches, you know.
Yeah, but that was sort of the story. See, I just find that stuff really interesting from like, you know, just sort of strategizing or just sort of that decision making of like figuring out what you can catch, you know, figuring out the logistics, you know, doing the math. Like you said, it's like you're doing the math even ahead of the tournament. You know, I just find that like all the things that start factoring themselves in, you know, and it starts to materialize, you know, even before you get there gathering information, but right up until takeoff on day one, you're probably just, you know, ripping that equation through your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew that to get a big bite, I needed to start pitching. And honestly, that's how I wanted to catch them. Like, pitching plastics is just so much fun. But then I know that I'm also pretty good at junk fishing. And I knew if I could go get my planer boards out in shallow water, like, I would definitely put 2 to 3 good bites in the boat to fill the box. I think some guys can get stubborn and, you know, you just don't pack your trolling gear, or you didn't get the confidence in it. Or I'm not afraid to just switch it up, you know, just like, now we're going to go troll for an hour, you know, like, but realistically, you know, if a guy just pitched all day, like Crow did, and you won the tournament, you know, and I knew like, if I got so many in my box, I would go back to pitching. So,
yeah,
it was an interesting tournament. It was actually truly a tournament I look forward to, where it's tough. The ounces are close, but I just knew like if you got like a good lucky bite each day, or like Crow did 2 bites the first day,
yep,
you know, like that was going to be the factor. And I like those. Like I'm a lot of guys are like, these are survival tournaments because they want to turn on their forward facing sonar. To be honest, I've been asked what were my favorite on the schedule, and I'm like, the 2 river tournaments, you know. not saying I'm bad at forward facing, but I feel like I'm better at a river. So that's kind of what I look for. Look, I'm really looking forward to the Mississippi.
I want to talk a little bit about just fishing, and you know, you've brought it up a couple times. So you did in pre-fish, you started trolling, and you talk about like in any tournament, you know, if you just gotta get your planer boards out or do some trolling, like you know, your brain can flip that switch easily. I'm sort of curious about that, like on sharp. You know, talk to me a little bit about like your trolling setup and sort of like the, you know, what the spots looked like, and you know, just talk about trolling. Just sort of in general for a little bit, but using this tournament as the example, because yeah, I think this would be really applicable to anybody that, you know, looking at the Minnesota and Wisconsin walleye openers coming up soon, right? There's going to be a lot of fish shallow. It doesn't even have to be a river deal, but it's like, there's going to be a lot of fish shallow in cold, clear water. You know, how do you figure out how to cover water and learn and catch a few fish along the way? I think this would be a great topic if you're down for it. I'm curious, like what does your setup look like? And the other thing too, I want to fit into this is like, when you start realizing that there's debris and gunk and slime in the water, like what are some adjustments that you make for that? Or just none at all, you just got to tough it out. I'm just sort of curious about painting that picture, like your shallow trolling setup and just sort of overall, you know, generalized strategy with that.
Good question. And there's a lot to kind of break down there. But before I got to sharp, we knew the water was clear and cold. So the first thing that I'd been packing was my hand lining gear. And there's only one other guy doing it, and that was my old partner, Bill Shimoda.
Bill.
And Bill is probably one of the best hand liners that has ever, you know, but if you look at clear water, cold water, it's the Detroit River and it's hand lining, and you just kind of get deeper or up closer to the dam. And I think Bill and I were both thinking, you know, we're going to be the only two hand line. If we can figure it out, that we could, you know, that could potentially win a tournament.
Yeah.
But after, you know, putting so many hours in, and I think I caught three saugers, I really wanted to ask Bill if he caught any, but we're just old enough now to where we just probably don't need to ask those questions to each other. Cause but I watched him fish, and I'd just being a longtime friend, I could tell he wasn't catching him doing it. So, and then I wasn't either, not that I'm very good at it, but I can do it, but just didn't work, but I wanted it to, but I didn't force it. Right. So then my next thing was I wanted to troll lead core, you know, but then I'm thinking, I'm like, God, this water's, it's just super clear, and you got your motor running over them. They seem spooky, and then getting that green slime. So I was like, oh, I just, when my baits are in the right zone, they're just getting slimed up, and I didn't like it, you know, and I didn't catch much on it. So I fired that too. So, you know, and then right away, I'd also packed just, basically my setup is I've got just, you know, regular Great Lakes type trolling rods that you use on planer boards. So like an 8-foot, you know, trolling rod with a smaller low profile, you know, line counter reel. And I just kind of focused on that, you know, 10 to 5 feet of water range. And I knew I had to put my baits back so I wasn't getting into that slime. So I just would go back anywhere from 25 to 50 feet of line and just find the right shad wraps and rumble shads and just, you know, did they want a rattle? Did they want a jointed bait? And it just started breaking it down to like, ooh, this green UV white natural purple type colors seem to be working better than the other. And then you kind of dial in, okay, 34 feet back and this and that, and you just mimic it and then just try to stay on your troll, you know, on your trail and mimic the same speed, because you're also factoring in a little bit of current. And in that system, it's like going downstream, you got to kind of double your speed. Going upstream, you know, you got to kind of lift, get your kicker going up. But I think important part was just the shallower water, going upstream, and then getting those boards away from the boat and having the confidence that I wasn't hitting the bottom, getting all, you know, gummed up. So that's kind of my breakdown on sharp and what it ended up working the best. And then I didn't get discouraged. One day we caught 12 pike anywhere from 2 pounds to 38 inches long. And I didn't get discouraged. I knew that if a person could roll through that same bay, that things could change overnight. Those could all be walleyes. Granted, I never did fit troll in there. I just knew it was a local thing that can turn on, you know. But like fast forwarding, like you said, to the Minnesota-Wisconsin opener, we're not big trollers up here, but I've seen pros like Tom Keenan and Chris Gilman and old trollers, you know, come to town and basically do what I did at Sharp. So 1 year, Keenan shows up with 3-4 guys in his boat, and it's one rod per guy out here. That's a big reason why we don't troll, is who's going to go troll with one planer board out? You know, it's just kind of weird. But that was part of his strategy. He had 4 planer boards out, and he basically made a lap around the lake and looked at his electronics and was like, these 4 areas have the most fish, you know? So that's kind of what I was doing on Sharp. Or if I go to like Lake Winnebago or something, like you're trolling to catch them, but you're also trolling to look at your electronics and find where the majority of the fish are. It might not be the best way to catch them, but it could be the best way to see them. Or just know that there's that many there and the competition's going to go after that crankbait, you know, and just knowing that the Missouri River fish love crankbaits, you know, no matter what time of year they're going to eat them. So, yeah, that's kind of a breakdown on that, on how you want to break down your trolling, I guess.
Yeah, man, I love it. I mean, I could, you know, listen to and just sort of geek out on all those different elements. You know, in Minnesota, I think you're right. I mean, just from a popularity standpoint, you know, trolling, just because it's like one line per person, it tends to be a lesser of a topic versus like the Dakotas, where we have 2 lines a piece, or, you know, like in Wisconsin, you get more lines or whatever. But you know, like you filmed a show with Jason up on Red, right? Like trolling, where you're just a spinning tackle and just a long bomb cast behind the boat and you go. I mean, there's still so much, you know, I think that there's definitely certain elements to that where it's either underappreciated and maybe some more people need to look into it, but there's definitely some people that are good at it. I know guys, you know, in and around the opener, you know, people cast a lot or cast crankbaits a lot, the jerk bait deal, and all that. But I mean, there's plenty of people that, you know, can still do that trolling just like you did, you know, fishing with Jason on that upper Red Lake. I think that's where it was, right?
Yeah, we were on upper Red Lake, and that's coming up in 2 weekends. That'll definitely work. Yeah. And for some reason, it just works good up there. The water's a little more dingy.
Yep.
It doesn't get as deep. It doesn't get to stay as clear when the wind blows it around. It dirties it up. And those fish, they don't mind crankbaits, you know. And another factor, you know, I didn't really say, is that a lot of people are up here on vacation, and a lot of their fishing is early in the morning and then right before dark. A lot of people go in and have lunch and kind of lounge around during the day. And when you're with a lot of family members and stuff, it's pretty easy to troll. If like there's 3, 4, 5 people in a boat, it's just a fun way. Honestly, it's one of my funnest ways. When August rolls around here, I pull out the crankbaits and we bring a couple beers with, and just, there's no, it doesn't get much more relaxing, you know, in those summer nights, or in the fall, it's kind of starting to cool off. A lot of it is evening or night trolling, you know, that you don't really factor in. But trolling in crankbaits is it's a lethal mixture that I feel kind of gets overlooked now, that all the attention kind of turns towards the forward facing sonar. But if you walk down a sporting goods aisle and you still see, you know, prominent crankbait aisle, there's a reason for that. People are buying them. They're still working. They're never not going to work.
The point you made about like Tommy Keenan, like, you know, yeah, the electronics kind of gets the headline, and it has been kind of, you know, fun and interesting to hear people, you know, even like tournament anglers talking about, you know, pre-fishing with your electronics, where it's not always, you know, the priority to catch fish or hook fish. You know, you can be so much more efficient just looking for it. But for somebody that's maybe not on that level or trying to get to that level, a great stepping stone in that is pulling crankbaits, where you just learn. Like, I'm thinking about you, during your pre-fish on sharp, even if in the tournament you had only casted, how valuable would have trolling have been just in your pre-fish based on what you learned? You covered water and you sampled fish. You sampled fish in certain areas. Like it would have still been a monumental tool. And like you said, people that go on destination fishing trips, not even a tournament scenario, but you know, you're going to fish for the next 3-4 days. If all you do is slip bobber, you know, like you're going to cover such a fraction. I mean, like a minute fraction of the amount of spots and sample as much water as if you just spent the first half of the first day just taking a hot lap around the lake with cranks, you know, experimentally. Yep.
I think another thing too is some of the spots where you maybe wanted to troll, there was so many people vertical jigging and pitching that it kind of made it impossible for a person to kind of troll through those areas. Same if you came to let's say Leech Lake here and you wanted to, oh, everybody's jigging on Pine Point, I think I'm gonna troll through there, like you'd get some pretty dirty looks, you know. So what trolling does too for yourself is it gets you away from those crowds, which I honestly believe, like, these fish feel the pressure. It's like a good example is like, you know, there was 20 deer out in that field, you know, and you're out there visibly, they can see you, you're pointing at them, or, you know, let's just say shooting at them, you know, like eventually they're not going to be on the field anymore, right? So what trolling does is it kind of gets you over some fresh fish that haven't been pressured, and it gets you away from the crowds. There's just a lot of good things about it, I think. And it potentially gets you set up for your own little spot where you go, man, I'm going to go back in there with jigs and bobbers now.
Right.
And just switch it up. It's amazing what trolling, you know, what you can still figure out and find and do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Trolling's definitely not dead. And I think too, like the, you know, you could probably speak on this, and maybe it's just sort of validating things you already know, but like talking about, you know, the guys that are dedicated to forward sonar on all these different bodies of water and all the, you know, strategy and all the learning that we're going through, you know, trollers, or just when you stop and do some trolling, there's definitely a positive influence with all that information, all that stuff that we learn from those things, talking about fish behavior and how fish set up. I mean, like, you know, trolling is definitely an evolving thing, even with that technology, even if it's not maybe necessarily turned on in the boat while you're trolling, you know, effectively. But trollers, everybody's learning from each other, and like things are getting so much more dialed into all those things. But yeah, trolling is definitely not dead for sure. I feel like I'm just getting going with trolling myself personally.
Yeah. And one thing to note too is that these new crankbaits that are weighted for forward facing sonar, they work. Like I work with GSM and we have a new bait on the Bill Lewis line called Depth Charge. And it's basically a weighted, doesn't really have a bill on it, but it looks like a minnow, you know, like a slash bait. And on my second cast out there, I caught one on it. That fish jetted off the bottom and annihilated that lure. And it is a box that I got ready before the tournament, was like, I think if I can get these over the right fish, you know, this will be a factor. And it worked for me, but I just never, I don't know why I put it away, or, you know, it just, I know that it'll become a factor down the line, but that's something that was noteworthy that people should check out, is that it's three different sizes. You know, Berkeley has other brands of it out there, and like the Finisher, I think it's called. And then, you know, those are starting to gain some ground.
Right on.
But basically, it's like casting a crankbait at these fish. They just love them.
Well, what else, man? What are sort of your parting thoughts after this Sharp tournament?
Oh, just I'm excited, you know, to be in the position I am, to get a decent finish. And my goal is to always, you know, cash a check. I mean, I really want to win one of these days. And I think it's going to come soon. But I'm always happy with trying to be just consistent. And I really want to focus on being consistent this year. And to be honest, I'm really looking forward to fishing opener here in Minnesota in 2 weeks. we do a thing called the Minky Open and Walleye Cup, and that's one thing I suggest for anybody listening is make a fun, like, event with your buddies, man. It just makes the weekend a lot funner. So the biggest fish here on our Leech Lake, we do it on Saturday of opener, and then we have a big fish fry, and the biggest fish wins the cup. And, you know, we each throw in 20, 25 bucks, whatever. It's pretty low key, but it's a pretty big deal to get your name on that traveling cup. So I'm looking forward to that. And then shortly after that, we are already venturing to Mississippi River in La Crosse. And no real big walleye tournaments have launched out of La Crosse. Like, we've been to the north, we've been to the south, but it's usually more of a bass tournament destination. So I've already got the maps spread out on my countertop here. I've been walking around while I've been talking to you. I haven't dialed in any spots, so I've been mostly paying attention to our conversation. But they are here, and I'm getting the juices flowing for that. And pretty soon, I'll start hopping in my boat and kind of putting that stuff aside, getting ready for it. So,
right on, man. I appreciate it, Dusty.
All right, buddy.
All right, we'll stay in touch, man.
Sounds good. Okay, take care.
Later, man.
Yeah, bye.